Improve your construction projects with real-time insights direct from the site with Procore's easy-to-use platform. Learn more at Procore.com. Procore, software for the people who build the world.
Well, it's Wednesday, the 1st of November, 2023, and this is Reconstruction with David Taylor and Phil Bishop from the Construction Index. And we'll be with you for the next half hour or so, mulling over some of the more interesting stories, or what we feel are some of the more interesting stories emerging from the UK construction sector in the past couple of weeks. And what have you spotted, Phil? Anything interesting? I hope so, anyway.
Well, hang on a minute. Did you just say it was November?
It's November. It's the 1st of November.
Yikes. How does that happen? Right. Anyway, yeah, back on track. Stuff in the construction industry news that we've been reporting on. A couple of interesting things that we'd like to talk about. And I'd like to start off with a report. Now, people are always publishing reports of how to change the world. And I try and look at them and you know, say, oh, there's another report out. And some are more interesting than others. But this one is actually quite interesting. Yeah. It's from Mace, called Closing the Circle. And it's all about circularity, circular economy in construction. And what's interesting about this is that, and this is all to do with reusing our waste. And the construction industry in the UK is pretty damn good. Compared to other countries, it's pretty much a world leader in its recycling of construction materials. And I've dug out a figure that UK-wide, it's reckoned to be 87% of construction waste is diverted from landfill. And given that the construction industry generates 62% of the UK's waste, according to this report I'm looking at here, not the Mace one, someone else's from a while ago, construction industry generates a heck of a lot of waste. Mm. And 87% of it is diverted from landfill. Okay, so a lot of it's burnt, it's not all recycled. But that's a pretty good number. The Mace report, which looks more particularly at London, and even more particularly the city of London, says that in London, the amount of waste recycled is 90.2%. Let's say 90%.
Yeah.
90% of waste from demolition and construction from London is currently recovered and reused / recycled. So you might think, well, we're doing pretty well, aren't we? Why do we, what's the panic? Well, that 10%, of course, is still a lot. How can we get better? Should always get better, moving forwards, etc. But more pertinently, what this report is about, called Closing the Circle, it's not about just recycling. This says that a lot of construction waste is shipped out and goes to either other uses, or even it goes overseas for use. And we've still got a big problem with the vast amount of virgin material that the construction industry is using. And how does the construction industry use less virgin material by reusing its own waste itself? That's the circle that we talk about, the circle circularity in it. And they reckon, Mace reckons, the Mace people who wrote this report, reckon that the way to close the circle, well, we should start off focusing on cities for various reasons, because there's the density of construction activity that goes on, and therefore there can more sort of sharing and cooperation that can go on. And in particular, they see London, not least because the UK is already, or London is already, pretty good at recycling its demolition and construction waste, if not reusing it itself, that London can be the world centre of excellence, if you like, for leading the way in circularity in construction.
I did look at this report. I haven't read it in detail, and I certainly haven't read it all the way through to the end. But the bit which, I mean, I think that 90.2% of material diverted from landfill is something which is quite impressive. But then, you know, when they say that much of this waste once reconstituted does not end back in the construction sector, I couldn't see anywhere in the report how much of it did end up in the construction sector. It says a lot of it doesn't. Now, 90.2% is an awful lot, is nearly all of it. And maybe not all of that goes back into construction, but I'd like to know what percentage goes back into construction. Did you see a figure for that anywhere? Because I couldn't find it.
No, I didn't see that specific figure.
Yeah.
But I suppose there's also a problem, even if it's being shipped off for Thames Tideway, for example, and other type Crossrail, I think more particularly, a lot of the tunnel spoil went to make bird sanctuaries in coastal areas, marshy areas of whatever the island is.
Somewhere out in Essex. Kent
or Essex or whatever. So it's reused in that way, but it's not the shipment involved, and you almost like finding a use for it. It's not like reusing it directly in the same project. And I think the vision here is that you take apart a steel building and you reuse those beams in the building that you're reconstructing in its place. So it's more about local, you know, directly local reuse of materials. And not answering your question, but moving on with some more detail from the report, the three points I took out of it, the recommendations that the authors are putting forward. One is this concept of materials passports. Now, I don't know whether you and I have talked about it on this podcast before, materials passports, but we've certainly reported about it on the Construction Index. Mm-hmm. And a particular project where this is being pioneered is on Fetter Lane in the City of London. The, I don't know if it's Edenica building. It's an office development, 100 Fetter Lane. Which designed by Fletcher Priest Architects for Baumont Real Estate Capital in Yard 9. And Mace is the main contractor there. And the whole point there is it's actually Waterman, the structural engineer, creating materials passports for the project, which is basically a way of digitally tagging every component, all the materials that are used in the building, so that when it comes for the building to be, because as we know these days, we don't make buildings to last, they come back down again.
Yes, that's right. Time,
which I think is a real problem, which people aren't addressing. We should be thinking like the Victorians or the Georgians or even the, further back than that, Tudors, and building buildings which will last for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
But we don't do that. But when we do want to take this building back down in 20 years' time to put up something even bigger, we will know the provenance of all the materials and how to reuse them and where to put them and so on and so forth. So materials passports is something that they want to be rolled out, used more widely. And this could be encouraged by, whether it's the planning authorities, local authorities, incentivizing it by making it a condition of planning maybe, or by scoring in the tender documents, in the bidding process, if you're going to use materials passports, you get X bounty points. And I suppose it scores on social value, doesn't it? And also the other issue they raise is, particularly in London, what's going to be a problem is if you're taking a building apart and you're going to reuse it either yourself on your own site or on a neighbouring site in London, in the City of London, these building components or these building materials, you're going to need a materials bank, a yard, basically, to stock everything, because there's always going to be a time lag. I don't think you do just-in-time demolition of take out a beam and immediately take it to the next place
and
go in again. So there's going to be an element of time lag. So you need yards to stockpile your reusable materials. And also you're going to need little mobile crushing screening plants for stone and aggregate and whatever. We do have these mobile screening plants, but they're not often on Fetter Lane, in the middle of the City of London. So there are space issues here. So that's a sort of a logistical thing to work around. And they don't say this, but there are plenty of old British home stores lying empty that we could stock and empty office blocks and empty department stores. But no, there is dead space in London that we need to find to stock material for reuse.
Well, I'm going back to my previous question, and you made the point, you cited the way that the spoil from the Crossrail was used to create this artificial island. I would struggle to see how all that spoil could have been reused certainly on that project itself. I mean, I don't know how you reuse tunnel spoil on a tunnelling project or anywhere else. I mean, where would you use that material within London on a construction project? I can't see where it would be reused. And so I think actually sending it out into the Thames Estuary and creating a wildlife sanctuary is actually quite a good way of reusing that. And this, I would imagine that probably the biggest single waste stream from the construction industry, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I would say that probably the biggest single waste stream is crushed concrete, crushed masonry. And I struggle to think of any alternative uses for that stuff outside of the construction sector. I mean, what would you use crushed concrete for if not as fill or aggregate in another construction project? So when Mace says a lot of this stuff doesn't go back into the construction sector, I just struggle to work out where it goes. I mean, all right, then they say that some of it is exported. Perfectly prepared to accept that. I can't imagine that an awful lot of it is exported because of the cost of exporting a basically very low-value bulk product would be prohibitive, I would have thought. So I still think that we need more data on this, actually. Maybe Mace has that data. Maybe it's even buried in the report. As I say, I haven't read it all the way through. But I don't know where all this waste stuff is going, if not back into the construction sector. I'm talking about steel. Obviously, steel would be another probably very significant waste stream. Plastics. What else? Timber. All right, then maybe a lot of timber can't be sent back into the construction sector unless it's turned into something like OSB or MDF and then used, reused again. And that happens already. A lot of waste timber is used to make board products. Polypipe and I think, is it Wickes? I can't remember. One of the merchant chains have got a scheme whereby plumbers can bring back their offcuts, their polypipe offcuts to the merchant, and then polypipe will collect them again next time it makes a delivery, take them back and feed them back into the production process. So that's circularity. That's happening already, maybe not happening enough.
No, that's recycling. I think the point is I think localism is the issue here.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to quote from the report here. Most recovered material is recycled, for example, with concrete broken down, that's what you're talking about, yeah, and reused as aggregate, often in road building. It should be noted here that a large portion of this material is recycled, but only a fraction of that recycled material will make its way back into the urban construction sector. What we see here could be characterised more as a cascading economy rather than a closed-loop circular economy. Now, I don't know why that matters.
No, I don't.
but I'm just going to read the next paragraph aloud. I haven't even read it to myself yet. Under some circumstances, recycling materials for use in further removed sectors could be deemed a success for circularity. But construction within the city of London, this is, faces a number of pressures, all of which increase the impetus for keeping materials within its construction supply chain. Closing the loop on material waste within the city will provide a core piece of the puzzle in ensuring the environmental and economic development of property within the square mile. Full stop. Okay, I think there's a word missing there.
All right.
But keeping it green and sustainable and pure, I think is the point there.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a bit slow, but I can't see what the added benefit of actually... this localism idea, I'm not sure what the value is beyond actually reducing the amount of transport required.
I suppose that what they're saying is that these people are putting up buildings in the City of London don't want to be using virgin material, and they are using virgin material. It may well be that some people somewhere else aren't using virgin material, but they are, and how do they stop using virgin material?
Yeah.
They have to reuse stuff that's being used before in the City of London.
Okay. I suppose if that obviously is the key point, the fact that if you do what Mace advises, then it means that you don't have to quarry as much stone, you don't have to smelt as much iron ore, you don't have to turn oil into plastic and stuff like that. Fair enough. I can't quite connect the loose ends, actually, to see how circularity is the answer to that. Maybe I should take an evening and read the report all the way through, and it might become
clear. Well, it's not
clear.
As long as you think it is. It says it's 31 pages, but a lot of the pages are a bullet pointy.
Yeah, that's true.
And some pages full of graphs and whatever. So it's only a...
Yeah, I've only given it 10 minutes.
20, 30-minute read. It's not too...
No, okay.
And you don't need to read the page on modelling methodology of how they, you know, where they show they're working.
Right, okay.
Let's just assume they've done their working properly. But it's... Yeah, I don't think that we're as bad as maybe this report suggests. You know, but the report isn't saying we're bad. It's just saying that because we're good, London can blaze the trail for the world.
Yes, they do make that point. Yeah. And actually, we have reported even this year, I think earlier this year, about one or two projects. I think possibly more than one project, certainly one project, where steelwork has actually been reused. I mean, McGee, the demolition contractor, was demolishing a department store somewhere in London and reusing the steelwork. I don't know if they were reusing it on site, but it was. I have a vague recollection of that. I can't remember where it was. Golden Lane. There we are, Golden Lane, somewhere in London. And the Steel Construction Institute has a reuse protocol, which we reported back in 2019. I don't know whether or not that's the same as circularity, but it is about, you know, reusing the steel members rather than melting them down and turning them to something else. So I suppose what Mace is doing is pointing out that people are already thinking in terms of circularity and reuse rather than recycling, and they want to formalise this.
I still wish we'd put up buildings for longer. So
absolutely.
The end of life.
Yeah.
Like forever buildings.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that would be much better. But as you say, that's not the way the construction industry works these days.
Well, they don't want to do it. It's back to that man in the white suit argument. They don't want to last. If they have buildings and roads that don't fall apart, you know, don't need repairing and replacing, there'll be no work or be too little work for the construction industry because...
Yes, exactly, yeah.
It's just like the man in the white suit.
Done and dusted, you can go home now, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting, though. Well, all right, then. I'll take an extra 10 minutes and finish the report and find out where I went wrong, but I still remain to be convinced.
Right, next topic. I think the most interesting business story of the past week or so has been the decision by Galliford Try to sell its piling division, Rock and Alluvium, to Van El.
Yeah.
This is interesting to me, several reasons. It's what's happening in the piling industry, and two is what's happening at Galliford Try. I think, did we talk about Galliford Try last time we met, David?
I don't know if it was last time, but we did recently because
Galliford Try has recently announced that it's setting up, or it's recruited someone to develop a business in house building, mm-hmm. partnership house building, as a contractor for housing associations, local authorities and so on, mainly sort of mid and high rise blocks of flats, not the speculative, you know, Barrett Estates type thing, but as a contractor building blocks of housing. That's interesting because it's not that long ago since it sold its house building businesses, Linden and Galliford Try Partnerships, to Bovis, and that's now Vistry. That was only two and a half years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as you said at the time, the assumption is that a non-compete clause has expired. And Galliford Try saying, well, let's get back into that business that we sold off. So that was a shift from Galliford. And here's another shift from Galliford Try, selling its piling business. Mm. And it's quite interesting to look at the business models of the different, you know, tier one contractors and see who has their own piling capability and who hasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, to name some that we do, as Balfour Beatty does, Lang O'Rourke does, Skanska does, and Vinci does. Oh, hang on, Skanska has cementation, of course.
Yes,
it does.
Yes.
And Vinci, and Vinci's got masses, Bashi Solitonge, and it bought Roger Bullivant about 10 or 12 years ago. So there are some contractors who see the importance of having, and of course, if you're putting up a big, important building, the only way to absolutely ensure that what you're building is on solid foundations is to build the foundations yourself.
Yeah.
If you want a job done properly, you do it yourself. And a building starts with the foundations. You want to make sure those foundations are done right. You do them yourself. So to me, that's what any contractor with big aims and big ideals should be doing. Others would say, well, no, you know, we're in the business of managing the construction process, and we know how to manage all our specialist contractors. We're not going to make the steelwork ourselves. We're going to manage that process, although, you know, not at least manage the erection rather than the production. And I think what's happened with, I'm guessing, I haven't had a conversation with Galliford Try, but my interpretation of their decision to sell Rock and Alluvium, if you are a piling contractor who is owned by a main contractor, whether you're a Stent, a Bullivant, a Rock and Alluvium, a Cementation, I imagine it's probably quite hard to find work for a tier one contractor. You know, I bet Cementation probably doesn't do that much work for any of Skanska's competitors.
Yeah.
Because Skanska's competitors say, we need a piling contractor. Should we give Skanska the money, or, you know, should we go to a pure independent, if you like, you know, pure piling contractor?
Right.
Whether that's a Keller or a Van Elle, who's only in the piling business. And I suspect that a Wilmot Dixon or a Mace or someone without its own piling division would rather use one of those independents than use a competitor's subsidiary.
Yeah.
But where Cementation or Rock and Alluvium might get lots of business is in the house building sector. You know, your Barretts and your Crest Nicholsons and so on, they don't really care. They don't compete with Balfour Beatty. They're not worried about, you know, putting money to their competitor. So I guess that Rock and Alluvium's big revenue streams have been Galliford Try and the house builders.
Okay.
That's my assumption. That's my take on it. Now, what's been happening in the house building business? It's gone a little bit to pot, as we know. And starts are down. So the work will have dried up. And in the year to June 2022, Rock and Alluvium's revenues dipped from 22 million to 15 million, 120 grand pre-tax profit became a 200 grand operating loss. So things have got a little bit sticky for Rock and Alluvium in the past year.
Right.
And I don't believe that that is unrelated to the house building downturn. Now, I may be completely wrong. Maybe it only does civil engineering projects. But that's my guess. So Galliford Try is saying, well, this business cannot get enough work outside of our house to be a flourishing, sustainable business. But if it's part of Van Elle, it could thrive, because lots and lots of people will put work to Van Elle. You know, lots more people will use Van Elle than would use us or our piling subsidiary. And Galliford Try, to help Rock and Alluvium on the way, to sweeten the deal, have done a deal with Van Elle that you are now our strategic partner for piling for the next 5 years. So they've got a sort of guaranteed, not guaranteed, because we don't know how much work Galliford Try is going to get, but semi-guaranteed workload from Galliford Try over the next 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting to see whether other piling contractors who are part or divisions of subsidiaries of main contractors will start to suffer in the same way, or be saying, oh, hang on, we might be better off independent.
It is interesting, isn't it, that it seems to be the piling sector that has this sort of relationship with tier one contractors. You know, the tier one contractors, generally speaking, tend to hire in or bring in specialist contractors like plant hirers and steelwork erectors and concrete contractors and people like that. Whereas, as you said, maybe it's because if you're going to build a building, you want to make sure that you're building it on firm foundations, and the best way to do it is to do those foundations yourself. I was looking at our latest sector focus in the magazine about the piling and foundation sector. And I think if you listed the companies or rolled them into their parent companies, our top 20 would probably go down to about 15 or even 12, because so many are owned by main contractors. I mean, Van Elle's at the top. I'm looking at the latest one, which, of course, is a little bit out of date, because we did this back in July, was it? Or May, I think. Van Elle is the biggest of the lot. And Rock and Alluvium was down at number 13. Well, now that's going to be owned by Van Elle. But then you've got Expanded, which is owned by Langer Rourke. Bachy Solotonge number three. Well, of course, then
Vinci.
Yeah, Vinci. But then you've got Roger Bullivant at number five.
Vinci.
And you've got Vibro Menard at number 11. Vinci.
Oh, they are as well, are they?
Yeah, they right. are. And they're a bit specialised. They don't do piling as such. They do sort of vibro stone columns, but still very much in the foundation sector, obviously. Rock and Alluvium, of course. And then you've got a few of the independents, you know, further down, like Frankie Foundations and Central Piling and stuff.
No, Frankie's part of a big Beswick's or someone, isn't it? It's part of a big Belgian company.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough.
I don't think their parent does much in the UK, though. So
no, okay.
Fine. Independent feel in the UK.
Yeah. So, it's interesting how these sort of leading specialist contractors are owned by main contractor groups, tier one contractor groups. Quite interesting. You mentioned Stent, which is a name that doesn't really... does Stent still exist? I think it's owned, by Balfour Beatty. I mean, we've got Balfour Beatty Civil Engineering, of course, which is absent from our list of top 20 foundations contractors, which is might seem a little bit of an anomaly. But the thing is that Balfour Beatty Civil Engineer, Balfour Beatty Ground Engineering doesn't list its results separately from the parent company, so we can't separate them out. Yeah, but interesting that main tier one contractors like to have a specialist foundations contractor in their back pocket.
I don't know when the Stent name disappeared. I'm just doing a quick Google, and the last sort of references to it seem to be about sort of our last reference, 2013, it seems. I don't know, 2016.
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know. So it's been, probably a good 10 years since Balfour Beatty dropped the Stent name. They brought Pennine as well into the name I'd forgotten about.
Ah, right, yes. They're owned by Balfour Beatty, are they? Right, okay, I'll make a note. But I think that's an interesting analysis, Phil, actually, about Galliford Try's motives for selling off Rock and Alluvium. It's a carefully calculated decision, obviously, one way or another.
Well, I don't think it's not Galliford Try needing the cash and saying, oh, how can we raise
no,
a bit of
no,
money?
Exactly.
Here's a,
no.
here's a standalone asset we can sell off. I think it's only my take on it. You know, if anyone from Galliford Try is listening, please tell me that I'm wrong and my analysis is wrong. But that's my take on
it. Yeah. I think next year when we look at the piling sector again, obviously Van Al is going to be bigger. He's going to increase its lead over its rivals. Many people will say, well, what about Keller? Because, of course, Keller is a massive international specialist contractor.
Yes,
but
we
only quote their UK operations, because if we were to look at them in the round, looking at their international operations, they would be far bigger than anybody else. But interesting bit of consolidation there, I think.
And also, I'm getting back to the Galliford Try getting back into house building angle. When they sold off Linden and the partnerships business a couple of years ago, and said, right, we're going to focus on civil engineering and construction. You kind of thought that they would absolutely want to, you know, embrace their pioneering vision. But actually, where they've had their growth has been the water industry. They made, you know, they bought North Midland Construction's water business and Nomenka, the process business of North Midland, and they've had a big push on water and environmental stuff and transport. So yeah, that seems to be where their eye is turned, but go back into building and away slightly from civil engineering in terms of foundations.
Yeah, interesting. Are we going to move on? Are we going to talk about the economy, or are we going to...
Now for the bad news.
Bad news.
Sorry about this.
Yeah.
Well, we've reported this week, Begbies Traynor, who are famous for... So they're basically an auditor, but a lot of what they do is administrations. They sort of help save / wrap up failed companies.
Mm-hmm.
And one could rather cruelly call them ambulance chasers. And they produce this quarterly red flag alert, a report into British corporate health. The latest one's out this week. And the number of construction companies in critical and significant distress, which are sound like general terms, but they have their specific definitions for them, which I'm not entirely clear about. Now then, there's been a, 46% leap between the second and third quarters of this year. A 46% leap in the number of construction companies that are now in critical financial distress. Critical financial distress means to do with county court judgments. It defined as having county court judgments exceeding £5,000 against them, which they say is often an indicator of imminent potential collapse of the business. So that's nearly nearly 6,000, 5,919, which sounds terrible, but actually, when you look at the number of construction firms there are in the country, it's only about 1.5% of the total, which is still a lot, but but more interesting is that 20% of the total number of construction companies, according to Begbie's Trainer, are in significant distress. Now, I couldn't find anywhere a definition of how they what significant distress means.
It just means slightly,
but it doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. Not quite as bad as critical, but yeah, obviously, I mean, it means that they're struggling or they've got issues. It is a bit dismal, isn't it? To read about this, I mean. We there's usually a steady sort of drip of insolvencies throughout the year. We obviously you report on them as they happen, and we've lost a few well known names over the last 12 months as well. But of course, there's a lot more going on below the surface than the ones which like the North Midland Construction you just mentioned. That was quite a big one last year when it went down. But there's a lot of smaller companies, SMEs, that just can't keep their heads above water and they go down. And that's, I suppose you'd call it churn. That's happening all the time. You know, businesses are going out of business. They're getting into trouble and they're winding up. But the fact that the proportion, you say it's only about 1%, but 5,000, nearly 6,000 companies in critical financial distress, doesn't sound good, does it?
No. Well, it's not good, but we know it's not good. I mean, there are all sorts of indicators out there. There was also yesterday, as we speak, but this week, the Construction Leadership Council's product availability group, who came into prominence. This is basically where the Construction Products Association, the manufacturers, and the Building Merchants Federation, the retailers, wholesalers, distributors, come together and say, because as we know, everyone knows, in the COVID times, there was massive shortages of stuff. Couldn't get timber, couldn't get whatever. Prices went up, waiting lists, lead times was a massive problem. So they started producing these regular reports saying, this is what's in short supply, getting more of these in, you might need to stockpile these because that's down the line looking bad. Anyway, their latest report basically says, fine with products, product availability, pretty good. The problem is other things in the supply chain. In line with the slowing market, brick, block and roof tile manufacturers are now balancing just-in-time production levels and stock on the ground. Storage is now proving challenging. In other words, no one's buying the stuff.
I feel sorry for the brick industry. You know, half the time they're being accused of not producing enough bricks and holding their house building up, and now they've got so many bricks they've got nowhere to keep them.
And they go on to say that there's a growing problem of cash flow and liquidity throughout the supply chain.
Yeah,
everyone in the industry, from clients through contractors and the material supply chain, has a role in addressing this. For example, hardening payment behaviours between tier 1, 2, 3, and 4 contractors are only adding to market pressures, especially on smaller firms. Hardening payment behaviours, that's a euphemism.
Yes, it is.
Twattish behaviour.
Yes, exactly.
By people higher up the chain, bullying people lower down the chain. And it says, we're also aware that some companies in the sector have experienced credit rating downgrades, which are impacting credit limits and putting additional pressure on those businesses in the wider industry. Subcontractors complain they cannot get credit insurance because of the negative assessment of their creditworthiness. With the rate of insolvencies, administration and construction continuing to rise, an expanded access to insurance is an area that all construction sectors need to address. So it's rippling around. It's not just, you know, lack of work. It's saying if you can't get the insurance, you can't do the work if you can get it.
So what's the You know, what's the outlook then for next year or the next couple of years? I mean,
well, we had the forecast. We had the forecast from the Construction Product Association, and I will just call that up. We are stuck in recession until 2025. There will be no rebound next year, as had previously been thought. I mean, just 3 months ago, they thought the Construction Products Association was forecasting a tiny, tiny rebound in 2024. But now it's going to be still a tiny, tiny falling back in next year. 0.3% down next year. I can't remember what they had predicted for the extent of the rebound in 2024, but that's not going to happen. So we're saying 6.8% fall in construction output this year, 2023. 0.3% fall in 24. And in 2025, what's the figure? Can you see it?
No, I can't see a 2025 figure. But it looks like the house building sector.
There we go. Sorry, 1.8%. 1.8% growth in 2025.
Okay.
Which is, that's fairly soft, actually. That's not a, you know, when you've fallen 6.8% and 0.3% in the past 2 years, this year you've fallen 6.8%. 1.8% is not a great rebound at all.
No, and one of the main factors in this is noticeable softening in the house building sector, because of course that's been probably the most buoyant and sort of healthy for the last 10 years, I would guess. I mean, that
and that's all to do with interest rates, of course.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Who can afford a mortgage now?
No,
that's the story. Yep. Yeah.
So, private housing repair, maintenance and improvement to fall by 11% in 2023 and remaining flat in 2024. And housing output down 19% in 2023 and remaining flat in 2024. So, you know, that's quite significant.
The question is, would all of this happened had Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng never been given 15 minutes of fame, or would it have happened anyway? Was it inevitable? They certainly accelerated the crash bang wallop.
Yeah, they did.
But would it have happened anyway? That I don't know.
No, I don't think we're qualified to judge that. You need to be an expert in these things. But I did, last time I spoke to my financial advisor, he showed me a graph which had a horrible dip in it about sort of September last year. And he said, well, that was Liz Truss.
Yeah.
So, you know, the two
big dips that you've got over the past few years, is that's COVID.
Yeah.
That's Liz Truss.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah. So it's a rather dismal outlook for the next year or two, or certainly for the next year. I don't know. I think the construction industry tends to surprise us. It's quite resilient in many ways. I mean, during the COVID lockdown, we thought that, I mean, the house building ground to a halt, completely ground to a halt, and sites closed all over the country. And yet, I suppose partly because the government acted to try and support small businesses and big businesses indeed, construction didn't suffer as badly as we thought it was going to. It seemed to bounce back quite well. And even, you know, with the cost of living increase and the lack of skills and shortage of materials, UK construction seems to have kept going, at least, if it hasn't ground to a halt.
Well, it will keep going, but no, I think you're perhaps being overly positive, because I think a lot of construction companies were propped up by government support.
Yes.
And construction is always propped up by government support, because so much of the work is done by the public sector, the infrastructure work.
Yeah.
Okay, water and energy are now private sector. Rail's sort of public sector again, isn't it? But a lot of work is in the public sector, and therefore it's construction being propped up by the state.
Yes,
and that will continue. But the point is, we are gonna see some of the chaff fall by the wayside over the next couple of years. There's going to be more. You know, more Buckinghams and more of these sort of companies are gonna go. I think that's inevitable, because there's no bounce back loans or whatever they're called to COVID loans to keep them propped up.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. So it's sink or swim basically for a lot of companies.
Yeah, I think the for some it's because of there'll be merger and acquisition. You know, take action before it's too late.
Yes,
I think keep in mind. And on that note, my not that I know anything, but purely from having watched the construction industry, over the past 30 years. Be mighty careful about any acquisitions you make, because most of them don't work. Do you remember the awful problem that, I mean, Balfour Beatty came very close to the edge, because Mansell and all these sort of regional construction businesses, and there's no sort of integrity. I don't mean that from a moral sense. I mean it from a
material structural sense.
And it became a very fragmented, disjointed, culturally and operationally business. And that was something that Leo Quinn had to come in and sort out a few years ago.
Yeah.
Kia, when it took over various bits of May Gurney, I mean, that went fairly close to the brink, purely because of over-enthusiastic acquisitions. Acquisitions can be far more bother than they're worth. You're often much better off doing what Galliford Try does and wait for the company to go under and then just pick it up out of receivership. Or hiring the people. Take the staff. Don't buy the business. Hire the people.
Yeah.
Because they're what make... It's the people that make companies and make companies great. I don't think there are too many brand names in construction which are worth as much as the companies themselves would like to think.
Interesting point, yeah. That's true.
Has it been the good news in the past couple of weeks, David?
I haven't noticed much good news. maybe I should see if there's anything which
we probably ought to talk about AI, since it's so much in the news.
Oh, yes.
Artificial intelligence. But I am utterly unqualified to talk about that. I'm quite sure that the AI machine will be doing my job within about 5 years' time, so I've got that to look forward
to. Quite
maybe
probably.
Maybe in 6 months' time. Yeah. And I'm sure it'll do it better.
Well, I mean, AI, there's this Rishi Sunak's chairing this international meeting at Bletchley Park today, in fact, and I think he's going to sit down with, who's that bloke?
Well, Musk is going to be there, isn't he?
Yeah, Elon Musk, yeah. And I don't know what they're going to talk about. But no, AI is very much in the news at the moment. And you've got two camps, basically. There, you've got people who say it's going to make us all far more wealthy. It's going to give us access to so much more information. We can do far more and work far less. And then other people who obviously say that it's going to be far cleverer than us. And once we start really getting into machine learning, these machines are going to learn so quickly that they're going to outstrip our capabilities, and we will be their slaves. It's all a little bit, I don't know which way I come down on this, actually, because do you remember 23 years ago when everybody was worried about the millennium bug, that as 1999 became 2000, everything was going to crash because we were so dependent on the technology.
That was a brilliantly orchestrated scare by the world's IT department.
It was, wasn't it? Rise. Well, I just wonder if it's the same with AI now. That is AI really going? I mean, it's the stuff of science fiction, isn't it? That robots will come to dominate us and we'll all be their slaves. AI is already being used, obviously, in all sorts of industries, including construction. It's been used quite cleverly in construction.
Do you know what I'm surprised I haven't read more about? I'm going to lower the tone here. The whole video, VHS videotape industry, absolutely took off, exploded, and was based on, all the money came from one sector. And the same is true from the internet. Do you know what they are? Porn, exactly. New technology, porn will be the first and fastest, rather like in, the motor racing sector will get hold of any sort of, lead the way on any new material or engine.
Oh, right, yes,
or
automotive stuff,
technology.
Yes, absolutely.
And that will trickle down to, first Caterpillar and then whatever, the rest of the industry. In the same way that we've seen it with home videotapes and video cameras, mm-hmm. video recording. We've seen it with the internet. With AI, porn will be on it like a bonnet. We'll give it all the money it needs. It will become a fact. And then we'll all have it. It'll trickle down to the rest of us and we'll be able to use it for nice savoury things.
Right, yes. It's probably happening already. If we've got AI working in construction, even if it's only on a very limited basis, then I assume that probably the pornography industry will be streets ahead already.
Now, you know how Tom the producer always censors any naughty words that we drop. I'm going to see if we can get this one past him. I think I'm going to have to trademark or copyright a brand name which I've just thought up. GPT.
That's not making it past.
Well, unfortunately, even before this podcast is out there, it's been censored by Tom. So sorry, Phil. If you do that, you do it without our support.
All righty. Okay. Right. I got to go. I'm going places. I'm going to Budapest this afternoon.
Well, look, have a great time.
Thank you.
And yeah.
And I'll see you 2 weeks today. Once again, people, thank you for listening. I was told by producer Tom that last time I kindly asked people if they wouldn't mind ever so nicely leaving us a review and giving us lots of stars on the review place if you're listening to this on an Apple device. And he said, oh, you can be much harder than that. So I'm going to be much harder than that. If you've listened this long, I'm going to guess that you find us vaguely interesting. So help us. Thank you.
Right, well, you go and enjoy your holiday now, Phil. You've done a sterling job.
Right, so that's it for another episode of Reconstruction. From David and I, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.